The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye-Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
Herman Mashaba, top entrepreneur and founder of Black Like Me, says, this book captures our South African leadership heritage well. Gareth Cliff says, better, more effective leadership is the one thing every South African agrees we need. What makes a great leader? Read this book. Neil Fruneman, CEO Sibanye-Gold, says seamless leadership is a vital contribution to grooming a future generation of leaders that will guide our nation through turbulent passages that inevitably lie ahead. Ian Donald, Nestle South Africa CEO, says, as one of South Africa's foremost leadership experts, Adrian Groenewald clearly outlines the approach leaders across the globe should adopt. Whether you are a CEO, a manager, a teacher, politician, or parent, get yourself and your team a copy of Seamless Leadership, Universal Lessons from South Africa. This book and the principles it teaches is exactly what you and the world need now. Visit your nearest exclusive books or CNA store, or of course order from Amazon. CliffCentral.com. Bernard Swanepoel in the studio. It's great to have him with us. Bernard, you left, what year did 2007, somewhere there?
Yeah, it will be 8 years soon. And my wife and I celebrate Freedom Day, which says a lot. You know, after 12 years in one job, you need a break. It's 8 years ago.
Wow. It's a long time, actually. And you were in that job as the CEO of Harmony for 12 years. You explained to us in the previous conversation, just very quickly, because this will be its own podcast, the growth of Harmony from when you took over until its height was what?
You know, in market cap, it was quite spectacular. It went from $25 odd million or something like that to a few billion dollars, US dollars. In terms of ounces produced, we went from 600,000 ounces of non-profitable gold to 3 million, which on the odd occasion did make a bit of profit. And then in terms of number of people at some stage, we were certainly one of the largest employers in the country with over 50,000 people, some 25 or so shafts or mines. So it was quite a sizable gold mining company.
So that in our language, Rich, we talk about movement, eh? I mean, that's serious movement. And it was very bold at the time, and it was transforming the gold mining and the mining industry. Of course, it's been a rocky ride for Harmony and all other gold mining companies for the last 8 years. What have you been doing since you left? I know you've got your own business, but you've been in the mining industry.
Yeah, no, I've recently been involved in a little mining company, Valiz Main Reef, which we just recently sold lock, stock, and smoking barrel to Chinese investors, Chinese private equity. I, for my sins, used my profile or allowed to be used for two conversations in Joburg, Joburg in Darba, where we try and create a platform to have honest conversations about mining. And then the junior in Darba, because the junior sector, the junior mining sector in our country is, I mean, they don't even get airtime, you know, never mind funding or, you know. And so I do those things, and then I experiment unashamedly in a space. I am the novice, which is, I call it social entrepreneurship. But it's trying to create good jobs, sustainable jobs, do it in a way which is, you know, never under attack by society, like gold mining. You know, I mean, it's a lovely business I'm doing with my daughter, and she's the expert, and I'm the student, and it's a lovely space to be in.
So you're not building another giant, are you?
I can honestly say no, because I know what it takes, and it has to take that. It takes, you know, innings of your life, which if you are not prepared to give it, you shouldn't, you know, sign up for it. And, I mean, the first 20 years of my working career was single-mindedly gold mining. The last 12 of that first 20 years was running one company, and I believe in a direction which was worth running it in, but it was against all odds and against the, you know, the fads of the moment and against, and I mean, it takes a lot out of you. And if you're not prepared to make that commitment, then there's a young man or woman somewhere who is prepared to make that commitment, and we should hand over to them.
Oh, very interesting. Just give us a bit of insight. We forget this so easily. It was dominant for a month, two, 3 months, headline news in the business papers and beyond, when Harmony tried to take over Gold Fields. Did we call it a hostile bid or hostile takeover?
Yeah, it was. And it certainly turned hostile about 30 seconds after we announced it.
It's all over. If we had to go back in the papers, I mean, it's easy to forget, but it was big, wasn't it, Bernard? And I've spoken to Ian Cockerell on the other side where he says he was having a braai with his family. This is movie stuff, Rich, Louis. He was having a braai with his family and he gets called to the phone, and I think it was you, saying to him, tell us what you say to him.
No, it was a Saturday afternoon, and I obviously thought it was the decent thing to do, to phone him and tell him that Monday morning, before the markets open, we're going to launch an unsolicited, which is fancy English for hostile, I suppose, unsolicited bid for his company. Obviously, there have been numerous conversations in the past, attempts to put forward a common sense which I thought was strongly shared by my shareholders, his shareholders, and a reality that unless we consolidate significantly further, we were all going to die, you know, because in gold mining, there's only so much you can do to the ore body. Firstly, it's been around for 4 billion years. You bring a bit of know-how and skills to which portion of that you mine, and we are experts at that, all of us. 110 years of mining, we know how to mine rock and pick the higher grades and the lower grades. But with cost pressures, I mean, quite honestly, mining is a big company game in South Africa. Deep level mining, big government, big unions. You can't play by your own set of rules. And so for me, the logical next step was to consolidate further. They made an interesting blunder of coming up with a corporate strategy, which their shareholders ultimately rejected, to split the company, for most of the management team to follow the international assets, and it was not a popular strategy. So the opportunism was in us pounding on their ill-conceived strategy, we thought. But the rest is history. 5 months, and I've read 400 million rands later, the deal was finally killed off by another ruling in a court somewhere in the world, and it just became value destructive, you know. It was as much as today, with hindsight, you can see that, you know, that is exactly what the industry needs. We do need consolidation.
So tell me there, you look back at it 8 years later, was that the right thing to do? Would you still maintain, gosh, we made a mistake, that was just one acquisition too far for Harmony, or not? Do you think it should have happened?
I certainly, I think with the benefit of hindsight, it would not have happened, because all that they had to do from a defense point of view was to legally frustrate the process. I think they instituted, by their own account, either 23 or 27 legal cases against us all over the world, including New York, etc. You know, so it was a legal frustration process. I naively thought, you ask your shareholders. You say to your shareholders, here's an offer. It's at a premium. We think they're a bunch of idiots. We think their currency is rubbish. But you decide. We never got to that point. So with hindsight, clearly, you know, if you hire all the lawyers in Joburg, you know, you can frustrate the process, because, I mean, time kills deals, and uncertainty and timing, you know, is goes sort of hand in hand. Could the industry have done with, you know, be those assets of the then Goldfields, could they be run differently? Well, I think your sponsor says it all. Sibanye Gold is living proof that those assets were dying to be run differently. So,
because they were on their way down, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then Sibanye took over, and now new life.
You know, you really need, this is like an old car that needs a new owner, so that you can sort of, you know, put a bit of fresh oil in, run it differently. And I would argue a lot of the things that are being done, you know, on those assets now, is exactly what we at least claim we would have done. I mean, we never did it, so it's now just an empty claim. But certainly at the time, our track record of operational efficiency was what we built the whole storyline on.
Fascinating story. And it was headline news almost every day for weeks, months on end, wasn't it? It was really, it was an interesting period. Your life must have been like 20 hours a day for a couple of months, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I don't know what happened in those other 4 days. I think it may have been 24 hour days. Yeah,
so it was really rough on you. On did your health? I mean, those 12 years, your health, did it suffer from? Or did you just enjoy the pressure? Did you enjoy running the business?
At the time, I was young and fit, and I stayed fit. I used to run every single morning of my life. You know, jog. sorry, I should not use the word run. You know, I would fit in marathons and comrades or so, you know, at the same time. And I think that was part of what keeps you sane, you know. I mean, that was my sort of de-stress way of handling the overall stress. But you become addicted, and it's like 6 months or 9 months after you've left that you realize, you know, I mean, you were on a, you know, an unsustainable treadmill. And certainly I was not in a position to have balance. I mean, so balance is a beautiful concept, but in 20-hour working days, there's not a hell of a lot of balance left, you know, and certainly even in 16-hour working days, you know, what is balance? It's sleep and work, you know what I mean? But I was fortunate, and I haven't had significant health issues. That all started, of course, as it always does, in the year after my de-stressing, you know. I think when your body physically readjusts to a different level, you know, that's when things that was probably underlying crept out.
Bernard, let's be honest here. Most acquisitions, the world over the last decade or more, acquisitions have been a big way of ensuring growth and so on and so forth. Globally, your Hewlett-Packard and your Compaq, and you can just go on and on with examples. In our country, a few, where your Vodafones have come in with Vodacom, your Walmart with Massmart, so different kind of versions of it. But I seem to find that most of them flop. In fact, most of them flop. An international big player comes in, take over for whatever the motives are, they sell it very effectively, it is a good fit. But in the end, they struggle to bed it down over 3-4 years while their competitors just move forward. Your view on that? I think it's an insatiable hunger for more. I guess it's capitalistic. Is it genuine? Is it a mistake? What's going on in the world? There's less of it now, I think. But you were on that trail. I mean, you tasted it, one acquisition after the other, until this massive one, which then failed in a while. After that you left. So tell us what that's like. I mean, it seems there's something wrong with it for me.
Now, I certainly fall into the category of people who believe the research that say most acquisitions actually destroy shareholder value.
Yes.
So if shareholder value is your mantra, you should really be careful. To me, if I hear somebody talk about synergies and strategic benefits, you know, if I don't have money in the company, I switch off, and if I've got money in the company, I phone my broker, you know, because, you know, and yet it's a legitimate tool of growth, but it's a high-risk one, and I think they fail substantially because of the people, the leadership challenge. Now, our recipe in Harmony was ruthless. It was that the leadership got the mine into trouble. And so, therefore, we didn't buy the leadership. We actually bought the assets and we bought the workers, if I just speak South Africanism now, you know. And we typically would significantly change the top leadership of a mine, you know. So we bring the benefit of those head office guys with their helicopters and their fancy cars. You no longer have to pay for them. That's sort of popular for a moment. And then on the mine, the most senior leadership typically got replaced by lesser levels, you know. I mean, because we use the same opportunity to go from 9, 10, 11 levels of hierarchy to 4, 5, or 6, depending on the circumstances. And that increases your risk in the eyes of the world, because how could you take over a mine that you don't know, and yet, you know, you take all the senior experienced guys out. And for us, we thought that was part of our key success, is, you know, we didn't waste our time trying to convince people who were set in their ways, people who loved the golf course, because how could you lead a mine unless you play golf? You know what I mean? And we dramatically changed that. But it was a very specific approach and a very specific set of circumstances. Ultimately, you say, so Harmony share price is certainly lower today than what it was when I joined.
It's awful. It just goes down, eh?
Yeah, but I can tell you categorically that unless Harmony did acquisitions, it would not have existed. The original Harmony I joined, and people can easily forget that, their official business plan was called Closure with Dignity. Now, the remaining 18,000 people were not excited by such a vision. You know? Closure with Dignity. Today, there are 33,000 people working for Harmony. And again, so from a shareholder wealth creation point of view, mining stocks are different. It is a cyclical thing. People take a view on gold, then they buy Harmony, whatever. But the original Harmony shareholders today, I would argue, would have had a zero share price unless there were acquisitions. But acquisitions is by far the highest risk growth method, in my opinion. I think if you have run out of organic or, you know, sort of leapfrog type growth, I think you should probably consider handing over to a younger person who sees new opportunities. Growth is what us old people do and the bankers advise us. Growth through acquisition, sorry.
Bernard, earlier you were quite clear about the leader you were, a CEO of a very successful business at the time and growing it from pretty much nothing to something amazing. And your view of what leadership is now and how you... So if you had to go back and lead Harmony again, you'd probably lead it differently in some ways in terms of how you know yourself, how you view leadership. What mistakes did you make? If you had to helicopter view, look back at the Bernard running, which everyone thought was fairly successful, what mistakes did Bernard Swanepoel make? What would you do differently as a CEO?
I recently had to share that with, you know, with an audience, and I've had time to reflect on it even more. I wish I listened more. I mean, you said it in your masterclass before the session. Because when I started out as fresh from varsity, knowing nothing, I was amazed at how smart the people in the change house were. Now, those days, you know, there was job reservation, so these were the entry-level white supervisors, the miners, the mine workers. And they were smart. And I was totally amazed and impressed. And then it took me 15 years later to remember how smart the people at the bottom of the organization was. Because in 3 or 4 or 5 years, I went right to the top. I found a lot of arrogance and, I would say, incompetence and, you know, and pretending and being egos. Protected
yeah,
by hierarchy and egos. And so I would, and I mean, obviously as you get older, hopefully you get wiser, not only slower, but... I mean, an hour spent with somebody really listening to him will change your world forever. Of course it changes this, their world. I mean, I related the story of, you know, as many South Africans, I had a great opportunity of meeting Madiba. And he listened to me. He listened so scaringly that 6 or 9 months later, he asked me about my twins and how they were. I mean, the most important person who's lived in our lifetimes bothered to listen to me at a level that he remembered that about me. And he changed my life. And yet, that's a tool that we all have, we can do. We get it right in relationships where we care. And if we bring that into, you know, I mean, then you don't have to be Superman. Then you don't have to know everything. You know, you just need to listen to other people in your team. Yes, that's easier. But people in your organization. And so I'm not talking about a mass meeting in a stadium. I've done those, you know. I'm not talking where you've got the microphone and then somebody else takes the microphone. You know what I mean? I'm talking about a one-on-one listening attentively where you actually say nothing and the other person speaks for an hour or so.
So go to the essence of the business. Try as much as you can, even though you're the CEO sitting fairly far from the operations, in some cases not necessarily, go and speak to the miners. Engage them. Remember how intelligent and wise they were when you were there. Because that hasn't changed.
Of course not.
No. You've changed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You've changed as a leader. That's powerful stuff there. One question I want Louis and Rich to come in, because you said some powerful things I want them to analyze. And should you have left Harmony earlier?
Yes.
I seem to think after the Goldfields thing failed, if I can call it failed, maybe soon after that to say, right, time to go. Well, when do you think, with hindsight, you should have left, perhaps?
I should have left after... 7 or 8 years, if you give your all, and if you look at typical CEOs and you look at their remuneration, you would hope they give their all. If after 6 or 7 years the organization hasn't picked up your strength and hasn't, unfortunately sometimes, picked up your blind spots or your weaknesses, I mean, then you are not impactful. So after that, you can stick around because you've got golden handcuffs, you can stick around because life is comfortable, but at high impact type sort of contribution, I mean, the type of person who becomes a CEO makes that, you know, I mean, there's a very steep curve up front and then it tapers off. I was very clear after 7 and 8 years and said so regularly that I have now made my contribution to Harmony. Then we started contemplating the Goldfields bit, and then my deal with correctly with my board was, if we succeed, I will stay for 2 years and implement it. And when we failed, they held me to the, and you have failed on this big acquisition, and therefore you'll stick around and see, you know, the aftermath through for 2 years. And that's how we got to 12, which was unashamedly 4 or 5 years longer than the optimum. For me, but more importantly, the optimum for the company would have been 7 or 8 years as a long stint. 2 terms. If it's good for the president of the country, should be good for the CEO.
Sure. Louis, Rich, your comments, Louis.
The one thought I want to really stress, Bernard mentioned about what he would do better. I think we should listen carefully to what he said there. He said he'll listen better, and he mentioned the price of paying, say, a solid hour with somebody, and then you benefit and the other person benefits. We've used the term conversational leadership, Bernard, to stress that. We feel it's an incredible tool if you understand it. You see, that wisdom that CEO needs, he can't just impart overnight, but he can draw from others. And Neil Freeman made the statement, the leader can't be perfect, but his team can. And there's a lot of wisdom in that. So I believe leaders out there must understand, even though you may feel confident and even arrogant about that, be careful. Listen. And slowly, surely, you'll start pick up other people's wisdom, which surely can increase your lifespan as impact leader.
Bernard, I must say, obviously, we speak to leaders a lot, and I have heard several of them say listening and so on. But I felt something different with you saying today. I know you have a way of saying things. You're a down-to-earth guy, and in your own way, charismatic. But the way you brought it, I don't know, to the table today, into the studio, to me, it's different from what I've heard before. Rich?
Yeah, listening is so important. But I think, as Bernard said, you go and listen to the least of them, because those are the people with the most wisdom, because they see it for what it is. They don't sugarcoat it. They'll tell you the way they see it. You know, and I think often that if we look at the whole listening thing, we often think it's listening to those in the hierarchy, you know. So we can't listen to the little guy because someone else is supposed to listen to him and someone else is supposed to listen to that one.
Mistake.
We've got to listen to everyone. Now, I think of a quote that I heard about one of the American presidents, and it's one of those, you know, old sort of 1700, 1800 presidents around about the Lincoln time, where he would see a poor boy on the street and he would shake that guy's hand because he didn't know that there could be such huge potential in that child that he meets on the street. And I think that's what, you know, we got to look at that and say, we think that they're nothing because they're in a position that's not necessarily just under our hierarchy, but they're the ones with the most wisdom, and we've got to give them time. And that's what leadership's about.
So true. Just to emphasize the point, I've sat down in personal leadership conversations with the mining overseas, or mine captains, as they're called, and with shift bosses. And I've been amazed at the wisdom and the quality and the strength as well. And in this case, I knew that the guys at the top just weren't listening as well.
Bernard, we have a Sibanye executive on the line. In a moment, we'll go to him, Chadwick, and ask him for just an inspirational thought or leadership thought at the end of the show. Before we go to him, the state of mining today, let's just go there, and then we'll get your message at the end for CEOs.
You know, all people, all generations say kids are now naughty, you know, and then you read the 1880 quote where they say kids are naughty and don't listen. You know what I mean? Mining is tough, yes. It is extremely tough. I do think inherently mining is a young person's game. It's a game which takes a lot out of people, and it is extremely tough out there. The regulatory environment is very challenging. We make things a lot more complicated than what is necessary. Having said all of that, out there somewhere, there's a 25-year-old guy or girl who can't wait to run one of these companies and show us how it should be done. And I agree with it. They should now, you know, get their chance to run it and run it differently. Because the recipe that I inherited was flawed, so obviously so that even I could come up with a different recipe. The recipe that I left for people may have had its contribution, but it's no longer the right recipe for going forward. And I think a new approach, an approach where the people in the organization truly, you know, gets listened to hop onto that point, then we will stop striking for 5.5 months for 12,000 rand. I mean, 12,500 rand is a legitimate claim for somebody who gets valued as a contributor. 12,500 rand is a ridiculous demand for somebody who gets seen as the person behind the rock drill who adds nothing other than that. It can be mechanized out, and that's the challenge for the next generation. We certainly left them enough challenges, and as Nancy Klein said, hopefully we leave them with some skills to solve these problems.
Solve it. All right, we've got Chadwick Bessett on the line, Sibanye Senior Vice President. He's going to share a very brief but powerful leadership thought with us, then we'll wrap up. Chadwick, welcome.
Hi, Adrian, thank you.
You've been in the studio, so you're a regular. Share your thought with us. I think it's powerful and it's relevant today.
Yeah, look, the thought I want to share today is the concept of consequential thinking. And it goes as follows. As a leader, every action has consequence. Make sure it is one you intend. As leaders, we should be aware of the unintended consequences of our actions. So my view is just when we make decisions, we should consider these possible consequences that were not intended. So sometimes it pays to consult before making, far-reaching decisions. I'd rather consult very widely before making these far-reaching decisions. And just maybe just lastly, and the reason for coming up with this thought is because the question of trust and credibility takes a long time to build. And it doesn't take much to destroy it. And therefore, my actions and the consequences, we need to consider them very carefully before we make these decisions.
It's almost unfair, isn't it? You can overnight destroy your credibility that you've built over many years with one decision, one action. Thank you so much, Chadwick. A great message for a great show, and we appreciate your thoughts there.
Oh, thank you very much, Bruce.
All right, as a leader, your every action has a consequence. Make sure it is one you intend. Bernard, I asked you to think of a brief message for CEOs. You've probably given them a lot to think of anyway, but what would you say to CEOs out there?
I think you summed it up front. I think, leadership should actually be our real title, our full-time job, our first profession. If it takes us 21 years to build our technical profession from sort of grade double naught all the way to first university degree, then we need to put time and effort into the leadership role we all end up in.
Good point. Society doesn't always see it like that. A few seconds, Rich, summary. What are we taking away? And then Louis.
Yeah, I think we should be teaching people about relationships, not leadership. That's what I take away from this show, because everything points back to listening, which is the basis of a relationship. And I mean, it happens time and time and time again from the show. We hear the listen, listen, and then if we're going to expect people to be as leadership as their first profession, then teach them about relationship. It's the easiest thing to understand in the world.
Maybe leadership is relationship. Maybe relationship is leadership. Louis,
ordinary. The thought building on what we discussed today is that mature listening mature listening is a sign of great character. And it's worthwhile investing in, and you'll be surprised, the leaders out there, if you cultivate that deliberately and with an open mind.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Bernard Swanepoel, for joining us today. Great panel, wonderful conversation. You can download the podcast a couple of hours from now. And next week I will be in the bush, and Rich is going to run the show. No doubt he'll have something in store for you, and I might join him, and the week after as well. So I might just join from the line for a short while.
Okay.
Otherwise I'll miss it too much, but do stay tuned. And of course next is, I believe, Candid Business. Stay tuned.
The Leadership Platform was brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
I'm the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one. CliffCentral.com